Thinking back for some of us 2 years long, long ago, and for others of us not too far past, how many of you tried to stay up on Christmas Eve with hopes of seeing someone show up? How many ever tried doing that? Now the question is, did you ever see this somebody? No? Keeping awake. If you were like me, you probably fell asleep, right? The best laid plans. Keeping awake. That's sort of the theme for today, if you didn't notice it already. Keeping awake. And that's not just trying to stay up on Christmas Eve as long as you can. It's not just doing like some of our youth did last night in the lock-in and trying to stay up as late as they could. And I think they went to bed, what, between 2 and 3 o'clock, somewhere in there. I'm not seeing some of them here, so I'm guessing maybe some of them are not keeping awake. And others of them who are here, you have our understanding if your lids are starting to get heavy. Keep awake. We have heard a section of scripture that comes right in the middle of two chapters in Matthew's gospel that is Matthew's version of eschatology. What? Eschatology. What is that? Basically, it is like theology is a logi, kind of words about theo, which is in Greek, God. Eschatology is a logi, words, logos, a word about the eschaton, the new age, the time to come, that for which we awake, the future that right now is just a glimmer in the eye. We know it's there, but we wonder. In chapter 24, leading into 25, the basic message of it is to keep awake and keep alert. And it begins with a question of the disciples, for Jesus has mentioned how things will change. And they ask, well, when will this be? What are the signs that we can tell that things are going to be changing? And the message of Jesus over and over and over again is, nobody's going to know. The time, the day, no one on earth knows. Angels don't know. Did you catch that in this verse? Not even the Son of Man knows. Only God knows. Which leads us to wonder, okay, what are we to pay attention to? What are we to keep awake for? If we're not paying attention to the signs, what does it mean to keep awake? I mean, supposedly as we're keeping awake, are we not supposed to be looking for stars going into certain alignments like those wise men did? Are we not supposed to be looking for the time so that we can tell, aha, now is the moment? That's not what keep awake means. But what does it mean? Is keeping awake something along the lines of what all children are supposed to do as they prepare for Christmas? You know that bit, you're trying to be not naughty, but nice? Well, I wonder, maybe. We look at this watching, this waiting, this keeping awake. And we find oftentimes when people talk about the end times, the eschaton, so quickly we shift over into another way of living. which seems to pay attention to the way the world will be, to the new heavens and the new earth, and pays less attention to the present earth, and more importantly, pays less attention to how we are to walk through this earth in the here and now. In the beginning of chapter 24, there is a verse which kind of alludes to these things, where Jesus says about in the day to come that there will be an increase of lawlessness. Which, with our particular mindsets, we may be thinking in terms of the laws of our land. Instead of the Torah, the law of God, the laws of our land which are connected to our constitution, which are connected to how we ought to behave in our country, but less maybe connected to the giver of the law, which is probably what Matthew and what Jesus meant when it talked about the increase of lawlessness, being as with the Ten Commandments, beginning not with the you shall or shalt not do something, but beginning with the relationship with God. You shall have, you know, the Lord is your God. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall have no graven images. Those commandments that are dealing with, first and foremost, a relationship with God, rather than enumerated laws. That's where it all begins, in the relationship with God. So if there is an increase of lawlessness, there is a decrease in the connection with the Creator, with the lawgiver. Jesus says here, according to Matthew, and because of the increase of lawlessness, the love of many will grow cold. So an increase of lawlessness brings about a decrease in love. A decrease in love. Which gets you to wonder, so therefore, how should a believer live? According to the way of the age, where there is a decrease of love? Or is this a whole other way of living, where we shift and seek to push in the opposite direction? If there is a decrease of love, do we increase, seek to increase our love? In fact, that seems to be the whole tenor of these two chapters. I mean, we go into chapter 25, and these are familiar parables of Jesus. We're talking about the eschaton, about the age to come. The first parable is the parable about the 10 bridesmaids. You know that parable. There are 10 bridesmaids. Each one has a lamp. 5 of them have wisely brought along extra oil so that those lamps might last through the night. 5 of them foolishly did not bring along extra oil. And when the arrival of the bridegroom has been delayed, and the lamps of those 5 unwise ones go out, they have to go and get some more oil. And when they come back, they realize that they have been left behind. And they won't be able to be a part of the celebration. The eschaton, you know, it's getting at how we live, but it's also the eschaton, the new age, as a celebration. And then the next parable is the parable of the talents. You know this one, where there is a master who leaves and he gives to 3 of his servants some talents, you know, which is in this case money. He gives 1 5 talents, 1 2 talents, and 1 just 1 talent. And what do they do with it? Well, the one who has been given 5 and the one who has been given 2, they go out and somehow manage to increase it, investing wisely or however. And so when the master comes back, they return the first one not 5 but 10 talents. The second one, and perhaps I've gotten these numbers wrong, but you know the story. And the second one returns not 2 but 4 talents. But the first one who sort of saw the master as kind of a mean, selfish type of guy and one who would not repay, you know, good with good, he went and he buried his talent. You know that story. And when he came back, he just gave one talent back, what he had been given. He didn't really work at developing what he had been given. He just gave back what he'd been given, and that's it. And so in this picture, it talks us a little bit about what keeping awake is about. It's about working on our own development, working on what we return to the Lord when the Lord comes back. So the eschaton is talked about, the New Age is talked about in terms of, okay, there's a celebration, there is also an accounting. A celebration and an accounting. The last story is one that is very familiar. It is the story of the sheep and the goats. You know that story. Where at the eschaton, on the last day, there will be this accounting that was mentioned in the previous story. And there will be a time when those who have sought to increase love will be like sheep. Is it the right hand of the Father? Those who have increased love, and they will not really know what they have done. If you hear the story, you know, as we have received it, you know, what Jesus said, they, you know, when did we see you thirsty and give you drink, give you food? When we saw, we didn't see that. But God says, yes, but you did. And it wasn't because you were looking to see me, just, you know, you were seeing in a way me and all of these people, and you were increasing your love. And those who did not do this, so ended up on the left side like goats in that gnashing of teeth part. So the eschaton is talked about in terms of a celebration. It's talked about in terms of an accounting. And it's talked about in terms of ethics. So often when people start talking about eschatology, they separate what's going to happen from how we shall then live. They separate the future from the present. And our call to live out the Sermon on the Mount, which is a part of Matthew's Gospel, by the way. And so we come back to this particular group of parables. There's a bunch of parables in there mentioning about how in Noah's day, people just weren't aware. They had, in many ways, turned away from their Creator. And they were lost. And then there's this bit about those who are out in the field. Did you catch that? One is taken and the other left behind. Well, I tell you, some people go to town with that phrase about left behind, you know, that whole series of books. Delightful books, not terribly biblical. Because this passage, this parable, these two things about the two people out in the field, and then there are two, maidens? No, what are they? There's the two women who are grinding meal together, and there are two out in the field, and one will be taken and one will be left. You catch that? Now that word taken is not disappear. It's not somehow, 1 minute they're there, and the next minute they're gone, and we won't know. And you know, there's a whole theology that's been developed around this. But that's not what the word is. The word in Greek, and let me read this out right, it's paralambonamai, which does not mean they will go up, they will go to meet, they will be snatched away, which, by the way, is one translation I have heard, be taken. This word doesn't mean that. It means that they will go with. And it's a word that was used by Matthew to describe when Jesus went up the Mount of Transfiguration and took with him Peter, James, and John. That's that word, took with him. And I don't believe that Peter and James and John and the other disciples were sitting there going, oh, Where'd they go? What happened? No, they went with. It's the same word that's used when, you know, in the very next chapter in Matthew's gospel that's talking about reconciliation, the need for reconciliation, and how when a brother or sister sins against you, how you're first supposed to go to that person and seek to try to make things right. And if they don't listen to you, you are supposed to then go and take with you two or three others. And those two or three others who kind of represent the church, who broaden the circle of reconciliation and discipleship, they don't somehow disappear in the church and everybody's wondering, well, where'd they go? I didn't see them leave. That's the same word. And it gets across the point that it's not that we're waiting to be snatched up, but we are living our lives so that when the Lord comes, we'll say, yeah, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to follow. And Jesus will say, okay, come on, let's get moving. There's work to be done. That's what the eschaton is. The eschaton is about God's work. It's about the new heaven and the new earth. But you know, we're a part of that. And just as, you know, in the story of Noah, when God created something different, he kind of started over again. You ever notice that the story of Noah is not just about humanity? It's the story of all creation. Because they all were invited in two by two, right? God is not just concerned with us. God is concerned about this new heaven and this new earth. And as the Apostle Paul said, all of creation is standing on tiptoe, waiting for the sons and daughters of God to come into their own. And that is what keeping awake is about. Being prepared.